Blog Talk Radio.
Out here in the perimeter, there are no stars. Out here, we is stone, immaculate.
Now listen to this. Another miraculous edition of Soma Time. Ooh, the clock tolls for me.
Mm-hmm.
On this eco night. Wow. Unbelievable.
Oh,
the show starts.
No
the show
idea.
Starts like every day in my life. I'm shocked I'm here.
Yes.
It's interesting.
Yes.
My television is having a problem. I don't know. Okay.
Oh, mine has SpongeBob on it.
Well, that's good. That'll keep your attention for the life of the show.
It will.
Well,
you know
what I got, that's the sad part. You'll watch that instead of talking to me.
You know what I got in the mail today?
What did you get?
I got SpongeBob, and I got Mr. Krabs, and I got Plankton,
mm-hmm.
and what's his name, the Starfish, and
what,
who else
like
is
actual
there?
Little dolls or something?
Yeah, they're like Beanie Babies and other critters. Yeah. Very cute. Oh, and also, what's his name? The snail, who is my favorite. The meowing snail, Gary.
Gary, yes.
It seems like we have a caller. Is it too early?
Wait, I have to send something to Bikini Bottom before we start.
There
you go.
You're an ass.
Take me to the river.
That's
beautiful
nice.
Thing. Well,
we're a classy bunch here.
Well, you know, we start in the toilet, we end in the toilet. It's like, you know. So we have a caller? Put him up.
I don't know if it's our guest or if it's a caller.
Oh, I don't know
caller.
If it is yet. I'm just getting on the early if it's the guest.
Well, all it has on it for the phone number is ones. 1111111.
Oh, well, I guess we could pop it on and see who. Sometimes we can't even take those, though.
I don't know. All right, I'll click it. You ready?
Yeah, click it. I'm here.
Okay.
Summertime, you're here. Is that you, Heather, or is that somebody else?
Yes, this is Heather.
Oh, hi. Okay, Heather.
I'm laughing at you guys.
Oh, good.
You should just run now. We're there for him.
You're our resident listener then for the first 10 minutes. Usually, when we go through the news, it's not pretty. But hang on there for a bit. We're going to get to you in a couple of minutes. We got to. Go through a little lap around the universe, and then we'll get you on here. I know your book's doing great, and we'll get to all that and how we absolutely can't stand The Secret. But you'll maybe convince us in an hour. I don't know.
That's right.
Sounds good.
Okay, so hang on for a minute. And that's our guest actually arriving early, and she's in the proverbial virtual green room. And we'll get back to her in a couple minutes. And
she's on hold there.
Okay, I'm popping on the... boy, I got my Arizona iced tea here that won't open up. I got... all kinds of fun things. So I'm convinced the world is pretty much written sanity right out of the script because would they ever figure out with that the whole German thing today? I only saw a little bit of it.
I was in my office all day. I saw nothing and heard nothing.
Mm. Professor Vail, usual bottomless pit of earthly knowledge.
Well, you know what I have tonight is a hatchet in my forehead headache. Going straight across.
If you're charting her symptoms, last week we had a cough and a thing.
Well, I
and
still
now
have
a
cough
headache.
Now and again.
All right, well, we have to have that. Do you have the David Lee Roth thing handy?
What David Lee Roth thing?
Ay, hey, Dios mío.
Don't be praying in Spanish to me.
I will find it.
Did you upload something?
No. Upload? What do you think this is? A fancy show?
Well, yeah. I upload things.
Listen, you do what you want in your downtime.
A judo, a jump, jump. A judo, a jump, jump.
That's the Commerce Secretary fighting off the press.
Oh, man.
Since it is an eco night, I figured that we should have a virtual guest here, as provided by an eco.
Well, SpongeBob's eco.
Leave him out of this.
You don't like SpongeBob.
No, I don't like him. I'm around him all the time.
That's right.
So we'll just sum it up. Let's see. Here's the first statement of the night. Just to ponder this, because we're going to be getting into a lot of intent, a lot of highbrow stuff here in a couple minutes, so we might as well start off in the valley.
Okay.
Here we go.
Tomorrow.
Do that again, David.
I live my life like there's no tomorrow.
There you go.
Yes, I'm living at a pace that kills. Woo!
There you go. I can't get enough of this.
He's not too eco.
No, no.
All I've got, I had to steal.
See,
not bad.
I was actually at the point today where I had most of the pigeons and New Rochelle at the window singing along with me because I pretty much beat this thing up for about 2 hours this morning. Now, in the news, I don't know if you caught this, but the patron saints of banality, Opie and Anthony, were taken off the K-Rock air.
Rick told me. That's how I knew. Yes. Yeah, K-Rock apparently changed formats again.
Yes.
As it does. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Of course, the reason why this is relevant is because David Lee Roth, of course, preceded Opie and Anthony
mm-hmm.
over there. He was horrible, horrible, trying to talk serious when really, you know, this is what he's good for. You know, this.
Oh, my God.
It's the best.
What is wrong with you?
Here's a long one. Hang on to this one.
God damn it, baby, no, I ain't lying to you. I'm only going to tell you one time.
You know, he reminds me of James Brown.
Yeah, only a white lamer version, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he's got that whole gobbledygook freaking language of his own there.
It's just, like I said, it's just Eco-Lala, so, you know.
It is.
It being the Eco-Moon, I figured that we would have a celebrity virtual guest here.
Yeah.
So.
Was James Brown Eco?
No.
He was Onto, right?
He was an Onto trying to be Eco, but he Onto so much he didn't care.
No.
Yeah, when you have songs going, you know, I'm black and I'm bad, I'm black and I'm proud, I think it was, no.
And a lot of ha.
Yeah, a lot of ha. Yeah, a lot of
woo!
This is my favorite one here. Yeah. So our phone number is 646-478-4847. It's summertime, baby, and it's Eco Night, and we have two Ecos on the show.
Yeah. We do.
Oh no. The host queue. Do you hear that?
No.
Then I'm now in the host queue.
I don't know what that means.
It doesn't mean anything, but it always happens.
Well, can we click on it and make it stop?
Is it, I can't see. Is there that stupid hand up there?
Yeah, the hand is there.
Well, I gotta hit the one like this.
No, that's it. Oh, wait.
It says I'm off the host queue.
Yeah, what does that mean?
I think I'm in a bad spot. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Let's see.
Oh, there it is again.
Yeah, you hit one now.
All right, we're gonna play. Here we go.
There you go. Now the hand went away, right?
No.
The hand's still there?
Yeah.
This is not good. I don't know what it is. It deserves to go in the host queue. It's like timeout or something.
Then it's accurate because you need timeout.
Well, I need more than that. All right, let's get Heather up here. She wrote a book and stuff, and she's world famous.
You grab her. Let me grab the horn.
All right, you grab the horn.
I forgot where.
All right, I'm on the host queue. What does this mean?
We should get those people on the phone.
Yeah, we should have a segment with live help. Yes.
That would actually be pretty funny.
Well, we'd know why our show is basically, you know, a technical miracle here.
Okay, all right, ready?
Okay, joining us from an undisclosed location, high above the IQ of the audience, we have Heather Ficken, author of The Spirit Trainer. She's been world famous for at least a day or two now. SpiritTrainer.com. It looks like I spelled spirit wrong on the. Well, yeah, I did. Wow. But it's the Spirit Trainer with two T's in the middle there. .com is her website, and she joins us here to discuss a lot of stuff, but mostly about her book, The Body of Love, 57 Secrets in Creating Your Ideal Body Using the Law of attraction. So welcome to Summertime, Heather.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, this has been an exciting 10 minutes of radio here. I don't even know if it's...
I can tell.
No, the first 10 minutes of the show is pretty much just stumbling into the bar here, and we've already had a pretty full day, so this is unwind time. But, you've done enough. I've been following the progression leading up to the debut of the book, so why don't you tell us a little bit about that and what's gone on the last couple of days as you have been seen by the public eye, as it were.
Yeah, it's been really great. Monday, I launched my book, and my intention was to become a bestseller. And I reached number 54, and I know in a few categories I was like one, and I forget, had something to do with hypnosis and diet, and then four and six in a couple of other categories. So I was just really excited because my mission was to really empower women with this book. I know you're not big fans of the law of attraction, but I have to tell you, my whole mission was, like I said, to empower women in a different way. So how I wrote this book was in two parts. The first part, I talk about my personal story on my weight issue and how my relationships with men, actually toxic relationships, affected my weight. And then the second part, I give women the tools for transformation. I call them the 57 Secrets for Law of Attraction, only because, with the Law of Attraction, it's always about what you're feeling and what you're thinking on the inside that creates the outside.
Yeah, I guess the metaphor that that was out there a while ago is you create your own reality. This is where we have a difficulty in Soma land with that one. But, we'll delve. We'll get into it because I think a lot of times I'm off the host cue.
All right.
I guess I'm out of jail. I have no idea what that means. So if I've been babbling for the last 10 minutes and all you hear is, that's them, not me. I guess we're streaming. I don't know. Is anybody in the chat room that can, or anyone listening that can verify that I'm... your little listeners there. They can verify that I'm being heard or whatever.
I'm going to take a look.
All right, then. So this law of attraction thing, it's not that we don't agree with it. It's just that it's incomplete in terms of the way the world works. Because say you're a five-year-old kid, and you have this concept that you create your own reality, which most five-year-old kids do, and you're walking along and you have the belief that the clouds are moving, with you as you walk along the street. Now, that's great until you bump into a kid walking the other direction who thinks he's moving the clouds the other way. So it's one of these things, like one of the biggest questions I have with this stuff is that where does your intent begin and somebody else has a contrary intent, like you see all the time in sports where they both pray to Jesus, and Jesus is basically on both sides of the field. So it just seems to be a very individualized, almost a vacuum container sort of thing where you're independently having intentions in this sort of, like you say, interior world. Well, yeah, it's very important to have a clear intent for yourself, but when you think that that's going to lead to other people behaving certain ways and the red lights changing on the main roads and all that stuff, that's when it starts to get a little squirrely for me. So could you give us a little bit about how you came to practice this law of attraction where you realize that, it's got its abstract nature?
Yeah, I think that's a really great question, and it's good to have a healthy skepticism about it. I know a lot of people either love The Secret or hate it, and, to me, I think The Secret really started a movement for people to take responsibility for their life instead of blaming it on someone or something, just like people like to blame the economy. Oh, my business is not prosperous because of the economy. So my take on it is you've got to take responsibility. I'm not denying what is going on, but it's all how you choose to react to it. So for me, when I discovered this, and this is way before The Secret even was going on, I was reading some books, doing my own research, and I found out about some of these universal laws and how if you apply these, then this, that will happen. I thought, this is pretty interesting. I don't really understand it, but you know what? I'm very open-minded, and I'm going to try it. So I kind of did my little test, and as I was just putting my intentions out there, things started happening. And I thought, this is crazy. People are going to think I'm insane because this is happening. And it would get to the point where I would think about something and, you know, what someone would say, and they would say it 5 seconds later. You know, I'm sure you've had it where you thought about calling someone and they call you.
Mm-hmm.
And
synchronicity.
Yeah, that's a little Jungian. Yeah, you're getting a little Jungian on us here, and we got to shrink in the room. Those expenses, all that, there used to be, I don't know how far back you go in this woo line of thinking, but, you know, almost 20 years ago now, James Redfield's book, what the heck was it called anyway, the nine insights or whatever it was, where they talked about there's no such thing as a coincidence, those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets into a lot of the Jungian concepts of a collective unconscious, and we talk about being interconnected and having non-local reality and all that kind of stuff, but that's not law of attraction per se, because, you know, law of attraction has to do much more with a self-referencing thing. It's more like the intrapersonal reality that's referencing, and it's good to be clear there. But the laws of interaction would say that there's more than one of us doing that, and your job is to sort of be able to align and share space and have an ability to resonate, you know, as they say, be on the same wavelength. And I think that's what happens, is they sort of externalized that concept, and they left out the fact that, like I said before, a perfectly legitimate thing would be competition. You know, you as an author competing with all the other books, I'm sure all the other authors wanted to be bestsellers, but there's some of them, you know, way up the line, and some of them. So it has to do with interaction, which you can send a signal out, but it has to be received. And that's why sometimes, you know, like the guy that just, I think by a couple of minutes, just got beat out by Alexander Graham Bell patenting the phone, right? You know, he did the same thing, and he didn't get any credit. And all the guys that were competing with Darwin didn't get any credit. So it's like this, it's got that winner's circle mentality. And the other thing I think that's maybe you can shed some light on is that it's tied into and maybe kind of reinforced by this concept of only positive, only abundance, only success, only wealth. So there's no secret for anybody else outside of the winner's circle. You're all losers and failures. Now leave us alone and stop with all your negativity for being a failure. So how do you explain trial and error? How do you explain learning? How do you explain anything that has to do with a full spectrum of experience, where the only thing that seems to count in the secret world is the pinnacle, as we call it, the anto, the self-referencing point, where everything is one and everything is great, when largely the population has a very mixed mosaic of experiences, good, bad, or indifferent, are false prophets, and they lead to a lot of deception and indulgence and maybe some nasty stuff later on. How do you get past that?
You bring up some very good points, because if we're referencing the secret, I think what a lot of people did is misinterpret that movie and thought, okay, if I'm just going to think positive thoughts, then I'm going to automatically manifest a necklace or $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't work that way. You actually have that law of polarity working. You know, you have the equal and opposite. You know, if you have something good happens and something bad will happen, we're always going to have those experiences. But the thing is, we also tend to label something as good or bad. So, you know, where do you draw the line? You know, what I would say to people is to really embrace everything that you're going through. And if you have a mission and a vision, when that is clear,
mm-hmm.
you're very clear on your intentions, you will get there. Of course you will have those challenges along the way. I know I have, but it's that persistence that keeps you going forward to dialing into that frequency of whatever that is, whether it be success in money. You know, I talk about my partner and I, we talk about wealth mastery success, and not just for money, but in your relationships, in your business, in your career. And it's just so much more than I think what people have been getting from The Secret. The Secret is great because it paves the way to really define what we really need to know. Like your show right now, okay, we're having this healthy discussion about it. Let's shed some light. Let's go a step further and help people to realize it's not always going to be positive. And guess what? It's good to have negative thoughts. Embrace that.
Wait, say that again.
It's actually good to have negative thoughts because you need that discernment within yourself. Anyone that says they're 100% positive every single day is lying to themselves. They're lying.
Right. That's right.
So it's really about that balance.
Hey, reality is so That's right. That's right. Reality is.
David chiming in there.
We have to deal with reality. We can't change it. We can't pretend that we're happy all the time. And I happen to like once in a while just to be completely negative and vile. I will bask in that. Ask Mark. He will tell you.
Don't talk. Well, the thing is, like I said, I think a lot of this has to do with extremes. Anyone that's exclusively positive in their thinking or exclusively negative in their thinking is in a false situation because it oscillates. And the context changes. I mean, Heather's book came out of a lot of crappy relationships, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There were
bad
relationships.
Absolutely.
And without that, the book has no depth. The book has no soul, so to speak, because there wasn't that moment where there was, and I don't think anyone's ever written a poem about happiness when they were happy. They were too busy being happy. It was when they were miserable, and they could have a perspective on happiness and say, wow, I really appreciate it now. So your stuff, it gets into a lot more of the literal experience of this conscious intent stuff you're talking about. Now, this is the kind of the mystery question because you're the author here, and you know, I haven't had a chance to read the book yet, but does conscious intent as a principle in terms of applying the rules of attraction and all that stuff, does it work through, over, or beyond the physical form we experience as a body? Because the body has a lot of not-so-conscious stuff going on. That we wouldn't want to be conscious of it. We wouldn't want to have the sort of the responsibility to govern it all. So how does if intent is such a small conscious intent is such a small segment of all the things that are happening to us, how do we influence this body we have when we don't even know if the intent's working through, over, or beyond it?
Yeah, that's a great question, you know, because our body, first off, is affected by our thoughts, and it can actually change the molecular structure. And, you know, we can see evidence from this, from science, you know, particularly the works of Dr. Bruce Lipton. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
Oh, I know Bruce. Oh, if you ever bump into him again, just ask him what it was like to come down the mountainside in California with me in the car.
Have the pleasure of interviewing him. So,
okay.
You know, he talks about, you know, you're really empowered to change your biology through your consciousness and your awareness. And I always like to say a lot of people are walking around drunk. And what I mean by that is they have no idea what they're thinking, what they're really thinking on a subconscious level and even conscious level, because the thoughts just kind of mesh together so that they're living this experience where, you know, consciously maybe they're saying, yes, I want to be healthy. Yes, I want to be a certain size. But subconsciously, they've got those programs running in the background that are ultimately dominating their body.
Now, wouldn't those other than conscious thoughts still be applying the law of attraction even though you're not aware of it?
You're talking about the non-conscious thoughts?
Yeah, the stuff that you're not even aware of that's sitting there going,
that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, you know, obviously you have to be aware of what you're thinking consciously and identify, you know, what are your subconscious beliefs. So you might ask yourself, well, how do I know what my subconscious beliefs are? Well, just look at your behaviors, look at your habits, and examine what you're doing on a day-to-day basis. A lot of times, you know, we're developing, I believe it's up into the age of 5 or 6, most of our beliefs are shaped from our parents, you know, and who we surrounded ourselves with. So we've been carrying that for years, and it's challenging for people to break out of that habit, to switch over to not necessarily 100% positive thinking, but to really change themselves to create that awareness, to create that shift within themselves.
And Bruce gets into that in his book, The Biology of Belief, in case anyone listening and want to pick that up. And his research was really about sort of the tyranny, I guess you want to call it, of this sort of Darwinian thinking about the way cells communicate. His research was in cell communication, again, stuff they're not conscious of. And his research pointed out that it was not the nucleus of the cell, not the genes that was creating the phenotype, what you see expressed out here, but the membrane. It was the living membrane, the thing that's in touch with the environment, which is sort of the somatic turnstile, as it were, that separates the interior environment from the exterior environment. And that goes on like Russian dolls all the way up, you know, to the cosmos and all the way down to the quarks and leptons and all those things down there that those, you know, bleep people talk about. Your stuff, because you're getting into image. We talk a lot in somatics about the difference between self-image and body image. And the perspective that women have about what's accepted, what's beautiful, what's thin enough, what's tall enough, all that stuff. Is there anything in your book that gets into the social conditioning about what to attract or not attract?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a lot of women say they want to look a certain way, but they have no idea why, because we've been conditioned as a society to think, okay, we've got to look like these Hollywood celebrities. So when I talk about creating your ideal body, I ask the question, you know, what feels real to you? What feels true? Not what other people think. And that's where a lot of women get caught up, that I should look a certain way. You know, no one's, you know, not if you're feeling true to yourself. No, it's really important to not buy into other people's values, because when you do that, you're not living your life for you. And that not only goes into your body, but every single area of your life.
Well, this is something, I guess, that Val can attest to more than I could, because the payoff or the rush or the sort of the endorphins you get from doing sort of like, I guess we call it physical reconstruction, you know, like going to the gym and lifting a lot, so to speak, right?
Yummy.
This is where she might chime in a little bit. And we got to get her. All right. I mean, that deserves something here.
He hates that I spend too much time over there.
Yes! Okay. So it's that rush people get from the high of actually using their physical form in intense activity. I'll just call it that, okay? Where that becomes the attachment. And maybe they don't get the physical results you're talking about, but they enjoy the aesthetics of going to the gym, hanging out with people, the social aspect of working out. How do you explain, you know, again, this law of attraction? Here I am doing the healthy behavior. Here I am intending to look good, and yet, you know, you're not going to be, you know, a model anytime soon. So it's like there's a process versus result, sort of the Zen aspect of it, that just the, you know, before enlightenment, chopping wood, carrying water, after enlightenment, chopping wood, carrying water. So how do you explain that aspect of it? If I'm doing all this stuff and I'm have the positive intent and I'm doing my meditations and nothing?
Right. Yeah, that's a great question. This is something that happened to me because of the result of these toxic relationships I was in. I found myself gaining this weight, and I could not release it. And I don't like to use the word lose. I like to use the word release. So I couldn't release it no matter how much I was dieting, exercising. I went to specialists. They could not figure out. They're like, oh, according to your blood work, you should be super, super lean. So that's when I really had to take this journey within myself and learn how to release from my subconscious mind what was really keeping me stuck. So it's a program that's running. You can have all the intent in the world. You can have the best diet and exercise program. But if you're not truly aligned on that deep level, on that deep subconscious level, then nothing will work. And I can truly say this because this is exactly what happened to me. So when I did the inner work, I allowed myself to let go. That's when I started to release, and I did nothing different.
Mm-hmm. So this is the consciousness part of it. This is the part where you actually get into the spirituality of the physical form, where we're actually getting into now things that are maybe greater than self in terms of when things manifest at that point in your life, whatever, like you said, when you got conscious of the fact that you were sabotaging or that there was other stuff back there that had nothing to do with all the right action, right livelihood, all the other things you were doing that were very, you know, on the Four Noble Truths type of plane. So this is where we get into some of the funky little gray areas that the soma comes in with the gristle. You know, the research was out, I guess it was around Christmas time, maybe it was right before that, where they said that people tend to gain weight if their friends do, even if they're not in the same location chowing down at the diner with them. So if you're friends with people that are fat, gaining weight, lazy, slobs, and you're doing all the great stuff, because of your social connection with them, non-locally, because there's no distance in the quantum foam here, you tend to gain weight too. Now, that's a weird little thing when you're thinking it's just my body and I'm doing all the right stuff. But this gets into that stuff you can't put a fork in. So how did you get to the point where you called yourself the spirit trainer when you're looking at a lot of things from the physical side? How do you connect those proverbial dots?
Yeah, I mean, because for me, it's really about aligning yourself mentally, emotionally, and, of course, spiritually. And then as a result, you will see that physical manifestation, you know, of what someone wants to attract, whether it be health or their ideal body. And a lot of people, you know, if you're talking about friends gaining weight, I remember hearing that the average salary is of the five people that you hang around the most, that's mm-hmm. what you tend to make. So it's like you're dialing into that frequency. And we could say the same thing could be true if you're gaining weight. You know, you're connecting to them on that level. And we're always sending out, a lot of people don't realize it, we're always sending out non-conscious information to people.
Mm-hmm. So this gets troubling with this law of attraction where you think that you're determining which way the birds fly over your head with your vision
yeah.
board and all your stuff.
Yeah.
And make a distinction for me here because you kind of went across that line a little bit where us somasapes kind of tune into this. When you say mentally, physically, spiritually, how do you, if everything's all connected, everything's all one, how do you make the distinction when I'm in a mode that's exclusively mental or exclusively spiritual or exclusively physical? Or is that even a point?
Do you mean as far as trying to change something?
Well, just like you said, we're working on all these different levels. If you're saying all
right.
these things can influence the outcome,
mm-hmm.
all these things can influence what happens
yeah.
to you, so how do you – see, what I say when someone's having a spiritual experience, I could point to, you know, certain brain physiological states, and I could point to certain, contemplative practices, or I could point to certain, spiritual practices, so to speak, that are ritualistic, or I could say, you know, this is where they go on Sunday, you know, that kind of thing. I know they're doing something spiritual in there. I think they're trying to. Where mental cognition, things like that, that tends to be more kind of the front of the brain store where you're talking about the pencil point, not the pencil, and you're talking much more about a convergent attention where sometimes spirituality is a divergent or open focus. There just seems to be almost no attempt to make all those puzzle pieces fit when we're talking about the generalities that come out of the secret because people like to have an easy way of thinking about it. And I think
right.
it leads to a lot of dead ends, a lot of people frustrated that, you know, the secret works for Heather. Look at Heather, beautiful Heather. Damn Heather. And then you're on a dartboard somewhere, and they're going, phew, you know. And it's like they're almost like it's almost like the other people that have already succeeded are, in a sense, sort of mocking the effort that other people are doing. Because, oh, there's no effort. There's just this conscious thing, man, and you don't have it, and I do. And it's almost like the way ESP was about 25, 30 years ago. I've got ESP and you don't, you know, kind of a thing. And when you start,
yeah.
there's the laugh. There's the laugh of the author. So how do you get past those blocks when you're still suffering, you're still, like I said, you're still looking for the combination of things to help you release
right.
the things that are holding you back, and you're using all the tools, you're following all the formulas, you're doing all that stuff, and it's almost like you're doing this big math problem and you're trying to get to the point where, you know, you got to carry the one, so to speak. What advice would you give to somebody who's picked up your book, maybe they're 50 pages into it, and they've already found 17 reasons why they've sabotaged themselves, and now they're sitting there going, ew, oh my. How am I going to get through the rest of this book and realize that, you know, I'm still going to have this sitting there waiting for me. I have no way to get at that. It's behind the iron curtain, so to speak. And it's in their bodies. I mean, you could feel it
mm-hmm.
as a tension. You could feel it as a heaviness. You could feel it as a sadness sometimes. You know, and somatics, we just talk about entrainment, coherence, real kind of like almost kind of boring physics terms. But your stuff gets into the emotion of who this person is and how they identify themselves. And the programming's coming in from hither, thither, yon, conscious, non-conscious, in their dreams, archetypes, planets. It's a lot to kind of, you know, figure out what to attract and what to reject, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and those are all good points. What I would say to that, the biggest thing that I find people have is resistance and attachment to attracting what it is that they want. So if someone's focusing on what they don't want, I hate my body, well, that's going to send out a message to their cells because our cells do have that consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So what I tell people to do is to really, if you're living in the moment, then you can really learn to be present and let go of that attachment. You know, change happens in the moment, not thinking about the past or projecting something in the future. So it's important to develop that awareness of what you're telling yourself, you know, what you're putting out there, and to change that. And that's what I really help in my book. You know, I go through those steps where you just can't. Here's the thing: people are reading so many books, so much information, and nothing is working. Why? Because they don't know how to apply it. You can't just pick up a book and say, oh, yeah, I've read that. You've got to absorb it. You have to live it in order for this to work.
And how do you, like I said, this is one of the things where people want results. You know, you see them saying, you know, they're going to lose, you know, 20 pounds by Friday.
Right.
And they run out and they do the Suddenly Slender and they do that stuff and they're popping these, you know, the Suddenly Slender. They're popping the water pills, you know, they're doing all that, you know, the track a stack or two. And it's like they can't get enough speed in their veins to get this thing going because of this fear. And a lot of it, again, has to do with, you know, the pursuit of happiness, so to speak, whatever they call that, whether it's money, fame, fortune, whatever it is. So the attachment, to me, came from outside them, came from what someone else told them the standard was. And a lot of times, their physiology is slowing down, their physiology is being affected because they're under, you know, a lot of different 31 flavors of stress. And that's what the body's producing under stress. It's like obesity came from famine. That was the physiology from famine. So the body would conserve its energy and be able to hold its heat, you know. Diabetes came from exposure to extreme cold. You know, all these conditions that we're fighting with this conventional warfare, so to speak, body's too smart for this. So even if you trick it, and I don't know if there's anyone who's ever done the secret's been out long enough for the wave to go back, but sort of that rags to riches to rags kind of thing where there's a lot of, like, Oprah's a perfect example of a yo-yo dieter, right? So how does someone who's gotten some results with your stuff, I maybe had the point where they were sitting there strutting it out and you know, doing testimonials for you, and they're singing the praises, and every morning they thank, you know, God, their mother, and Heather. And then 6 months later, they're in a car accident, they're laid up for a while, they're eating the bonbons, and they're feeling sorry for themselves, and all of a sudden, boop, 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 and now they're back on the I want to jump off the ledge book, you know, and it's like, how does someone who is so pedestalized into thinking that results and success, all the things I said before, that positivity, never think a negative thought, and all
mm-hmm.
of a sudden something horrible happens to them.
And
again, because they're convinced that the law of attraction did it, oh, one of those unconscious things got me. Are you ever really safe in that model? Because it just seems like you're in a balloon that's expanding until, as you know, just like in life, one little prick comes along and ruins it for everybody, you know? It's like fragile, I guess is the word.
To me, I believe we have to take responsibility to what happens in our lives, you know, and how we respond. And I can definitely relate to what you're talking about, because in my book, in the first part, I talk about how I wanted to, at one point, take my own life. I was just very depressed with the weight that I'd gained. And prior to that, you know, I was in perfect shape, loved my body, felt great. So you get a person that's all into fitness, perfectly healthy, and then goes the opposite direction. So for me, it was almost like I had to relearn everything. And I asked myself the question, what is the blessing that is happening to me right now? And that was very hard for me. Mm-hmm. So when I asked that question, what came to me is, you know what, Heather, you are going to write a book about this experience and empower women all over the world. And I knew that as a person, that was very, very strong, even though I felt weak in that moment, that was ultimately strong that I could handle that, that I was supposed to be that messenger for it. So I look at it at a very deep level. I believe that we experience things that are very challenging and that our souls just signed up for that. So I believe I signed up for that to experience it, to get that word out. And no matter what's going on, you can always find a benefit of the most challenging situation. I was raped twice. I find the benefits. I do not make myself a victim of that, because if I do, I give my power away.
Well, again, you're tapping into a lot of the stuff that President Obama has been talking about for 2 weeks, is that the Chinese character for crisis is the same one for opportunity. And so you can take that experience any way you want, but if you become, as we kind of affectionately call them, a valley victim, and you're a turtle on your back, that becomes the way that you identify yourself. And so even if good stuff comes along, it's perceived as a threat. Where if you do what you're doing and reframe it and say, because I had this experience, I am now eligible and I'm now an authority to tell other people that have fallen into the same little well to get the hell out. And that's empowering. That's actually a good use of the law of connection, which they haven't written that book yet, to take what you have attracted. Because, you know, we're all kind of pulling it up from the bottom of the ocean, so to speak. This is what you get. It's like the old Forrest Gump thing. And then you got to sort it out and figure out, okay, what's shareable, what's not shareable, what's forgettable, what's not forgettable. And then you go and connect with others. And what you're saying is that, and then this is the beauty, you did this almost in like between trapeze here as you were going through all your stuff there. I don't know if all that stuff happened at the same period of time in your life or it was kind of pocketed through a decade or so, but you knew you had an audience of other people, and you singled out women over men. You singled out, you know, it's going to be more about their physical perception of themselves than all the emotional stuff that I don't want to get into. And the results that you got personally, which was to transform your body as a result of those experiences, and rather than stay in the traumatized body that absorbed those experiences, all that is application of the theory of law of attraction. Most of the stuff I see out there about law of attraction is just a lot of blah, 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 with nothing to apply. So you had the suffering first. You took you went to the University of Adversity, as I like to call it, and you graduated, and now you're a professor. And so now someone comes along from the School of Hard Knocks, which is like undergrad, and says, you know, oh, I had this horrible experience. Oh, really? Oh, really? And you go, I got this little dartboard over here with my little souvenirs, buddy. And it's like, it's almost as if, just like we don't learn how to walk until we've fallen a million times, we don't remember one of those falls as soon as we learn how to walk. It's the same thing with this. As soon as you got the gumption to say, down here in the valley, which most people don't know how to perform in the valley, only at the peak. They just wait for the next peak. And then they get fear of heights, and they don't even go up the mountain anymore. When they're down in that valley, and they can, as we say, exo, and see themselves externally, see themselves as if they're not themselves, almost project that person away and say, I can help this person, and I'm not going to identify with this person as me. I'm going to identify this person as a community of people who have all fallen into the same little valley here with me, and I'm going to lead them up this hill. And at that point, you become Anto. You become the boss. And then that's when the law of attraction says, oh, this person has a vector, Victor, and you get the wind at your sails. It's only when you look over your shoulder, it's almost like when you're riding your bike and you realize, or you're skiing, and you, it's like the moment you start having that conversation, wow, I'm really riding this bike, crash. It's like you can't get into the internal dialogue of it. You have to have it much, be much more kind of, I hate to say it, not so conscious, which is the opposite message of a lot of the stuff I see with The Secret, which is to keep it conscious, which is, like I said, again, it's a mixed message in a way. So you've done a lot to unravel this, but how do you deal with people that are just basically afraid for unknown misery, and they're so used to the known misery? Now, maybe they don't have the traumas that you had, but they've got a lot of dripping faucets going on. And it's like to make all these leaps of faith and to make all these assertions is great when you're down there and you're frustrated and you're angry and you've got a Yosemite, you Sam your way up the mountain, but then you hit a brick wall, two steps into it. What advice you give those people to just say ignore that and don't perceive that, go inside more? How do you get people past that no misery kind of thing? I'm miserable enough. I don't want any more unknown misery. It's almost like I want to stop, gambling here, digging this hole. I want to do something that's constructive.
Yeah, I mean, fear is a huge issue, whether you're relating it to your body or money or relationships. And if someone is having fear, if they're feeling it, I say, go ahead and feel it. Do not deny yourself those feelings, because mm-hmm. if you do, it's going to get trapped in your body. And what I said earlier is that, your thoughts can change the molecular structure of your body. So express it, cry, write it down. What I like to tell clients to do is move your physical body out of that space that you're having a moment, if you will, and go for a walk, do something else. And then you find that really takes that fear away, it releases that more. But face it. Don't sweep it underneath the rug. We've been conditioned as a society to say, oh, you shouldn't feel this way. And, when people are having fear, it's really about something that hasn't even happened. I'm sure you've heard the phrase, fear stands for future events appearing real. So it's something that they're creating, or what I, Neil Donald Walsh says, it's feeling excited and ready. So feel it.
Well, we've done some shows on fear, and basically a lot of people have it confused, especially with they think anxiety is a feeling. Fear is a lot of it is self-preservation, and it also means that you're initiating a learning experience. Anytime something new comes in, it's a threat to what was already there. So we have this sort of double-edged sword where we're always seeking something novel, something new, something that we haven't experienced before. It's why you go to the movies. It's why you do some things that you could never justify with any kind of logic. But then when we actually make contact with it, there's that moment of disorientation. That's the roller coaster ride. Now, are you going to white knuckle it, or are you going to throw your hands up and go, wee? And that's kind of the long and the short of what goes on with The Secret book, is that if you were given these immense powers of the ancient ones have handed down, and all, what would you do with it, Midas? Because it becomes sort of like this burden where that every thought you have becomes sort of like, oh, a negative thought. Oh, I just killed 10 people in India. It gets a little crazy. I think you've sort of reined that in to say that no, you're not killing anyone in India because you were mad at the guy that cut you off in traffic. All you did was reinforce the fact that your belief system said this should have happened, and then that happened, and you had a mismatch, And so if you understand that only happened in the moment, small little physiological brush fire, don't internalize it, as you say, release it. And then basically it is just bird poop on the windshield. It's not going to affect you. But to think that the bird is aiming, now that gets a little nuts. And then you get from positive versus negative to optimistic versus pessimistic to idealistic versus really, really realistic, and you start getting into worldviews, which are much more complex than just thinking about beliefs. And what we're talking about in somatics is just simply orientation. Which way are you facing? What are you paying attention to? And most people, like I said, they don't include their body in their thought process. They only think of it, as you say, more of a mental construct, And it's, the mind is sort of an absentee landlord in a way with that, because it can have all this negative thoughts, and who suffers? The body suffers, because it has to deal with the physiology it just created. So cleaning it up and having that conversation within yourself, both on the verbal and nonverbal, conscious, non-conscious, aware, non-aware level, collective versus personal, all that gobbledygook is great. But you're saying, I guess in the theme of your book, is that people have to own up to the fact that a lot of the things that happen to them on a repeated basis is because they haven't given themselves another option. So, you know, like you say, the cells are basically eavesdropping on it. They become to the point where they become used to having those experiences, and they'll induce that state. So opportunity comes to one person's door, and it's like, oh, they'll welcome it in. It comes to another person's door, and they perceive that as a threat. And they'll lock up, and they won't accept that opportunity, or they'll bungle it because they're not open to it. They haven't cleared a space for it. Sometimes I say space for grace. And I think your book is saying, especially with women who are given so many mixed messages about how to succeed, how to be a professional, how to be, you know, independent. That's another one. Women have, this is something that Professor Val talks about a lot with her students and stuff, is that an independent woman, if she's successful, and Heather is always going to have other women not too happy with her for doing that, because it sort of exposes a cultural speed bump that says, because you did that, now I got to do it too, and I don't really want to. I like being more interdependent with my, you know, my social circle, and I don't want to brand out. I don't want to be someone who has to carve a niche. I don't want to carve a niche. I want to carve some bread here. So how do you... especially with women, how do you get women to own up to the fact that a lot of their resistance to change, and they're more resistant than men, according to the change report, how do you get them to buy into this stuff you're talking about when it really kind of violates a lot of their core beliefs?
Who said women were more resistant to change than men? Are you
the
out of your
The change report. You must read the change report.
I don't care what it is. That's bad.
They are. They are. That,
listen, oh, bullshit.
Read and weep. A woman wrote it. So
well, maybe she was in a cranky mood because some guy pissed all over her.
All
like
right,
you do to women.
Victor, well, what I do to women? I'm nice to women.
You're not nice.
Let's let Heather answer there. Go ahead.
You know, I think you bring some interesting points, and I don't know if I necessarily agree, because I would have to read that report.
I'll send it to you.
You know,
send
about
it to me. I could blow my nose in it.
Well, the women are more resistant to change because you're more sensitive to it. Again, a lot of it has to do with biology, too. It's biology, too. The men hunt, the women, you know, there's a lot of things there. But if she's targeting women specifically, they have a much more difficult time saying, I want to be independent, I want to be in control, I want to be basically the one that initiates these things, when their entire programming is basically to be extremely, almost selfless in the way that they conduct their lives.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a lot of people have, or I should say women, have a lot of roles to fulfill. Maybe they have a job, they have a family. So what I tell women is, you know what, you have to be selfish, and I mean selfish in a good way, and set your boundaries when it comes to your children, when it comes to your husband or your boyfriend, and say, you know what, I've got to do this for me. And if you don't, you're going to attract those same lessons to you. And I know this from experience. You know, people treat us how we teach them.
Mm-hmm.
So you really have to come within your own, you know, living in your truth and saying, you know what, this is who I am. And I am going to live my life for me, not you, because the minute you start compromising, you start resenting that person, especially in relationships.
Yeah, and again, this is one of the things that puts them on Oprah's couch. You know, what do I do now? I feel guilty for doing something for myself. And then, of course, they just slide down to Dr. Phil, who screams at them. So it's like, how do you get them to take we talk about a first-person authority when just because of their chromosomes, they're not allowed to do that without permission. There's not a dude on the planet, I don't care how much of a, you know, wimp he is in terms of the way he perceives himself, that goes in his head and goes, I better ask permission before I do that. No, they just do it. And they get into various degrees of trouble, of course. I'm basically guilty of, as I said,
the
chair.
Who, you?
I'm,
no,
I did
you
it
never
already,
get
yeah.
in trouble.
Yeah, well, no, I'm never in trouble. That was a good one, Dave. But anyway, I just think because I was fascinated the fact that you selected women as the target audience when they have generational reasons to not make changes. They sometimes have social constructions. You saw there's a lot of things with just the way they perceive their bodies. When we're dealing with, I don't know if you follow some of the stuff like the sexting that's going on now. It's rampant in the culture with the teenagers sending naked pictures to each other. Women's bodies are a commodity that is bought and sold in the culture because they could put a pretty girl next to just about anything and sell it. So women do a lot of weird stuff. I mean, the damn Bachelor makes me vomit, but it's like they do that stuff. They do that stuff because it leads to some sense of independence, even if it is artificially manufactured. But, yeah, I mean, that's why I'm glad you did what you did. But I'm also fascinated with the fact that women responded so well because it would seem like, A, they would say, well, that's good for Heather, not good for me. And, B, even if it does work for me, I've got to go through so much BS to get it that I don't know if I have the stomach for it, literally. Like, I don't know if I can handle all the negativity that's going to come flying at me when I make this change. Where a dude that does it, it's like he's just doing his thing. And it's like he doesn't have to sort of justify his actions as much as especially a woman that's, like you say, married, kids, all that stuff. It's like they're abandoning their primary responsibilities and you say, being selfish in a good way. So I don't know what the feedback has been as people apply your stuff, more so from the men in their lives than what they're doing. Do they just say, oh, no, old Mary's getting uppity here, and she's not. She's going to her Pilates class instead of making my dinner. And there's a lot of that. There's still a lot of traditional sort of 1950s mentality out there, and I just wonder if you've run into that early on in the marketing of the book.
You know, it's really interesting because I do work with a lot of women that have these issues come up, and the women that have read my book so far absolutely love it. They're like, this is exactly what I needed. I've been reading all these Law of Attraction books, and this is the book I've been waiting for. And men will actually feel threatened if a woman stands in her true power, her true self, and says, you know what, I want to go to the gym and work out. You watch the kids. So what I would say to women is be strong. Learn how to be your own self, and also learn how to communicate in terms of his values, the husband's or the boyfriend. So if you know he values his free time, you communicate that message that he is receptive and says, oh, sure, I'll watch the kids. Oh, honey, I know how much your free time means to me, so I know, I'm going to do this or whatever, whatever you feel aligned with, not necessarily compromising yourself, but understanding the person because, when you're in a relationship, we always want to be heard. It's always the egos going back and forth when there's any kind of conflict. So the secret really is to learn how to communicate and know what their values are. Most people don't know that.
Yeah, like I said, I think that you've made that clear. I will give you, we cannot completely shut out the secret tonight because we've heard the rumor, which is inside the secret, which you're starting, which is that it is a foundational framework. It is not the be-all, end-all. It is not the complete sentence, so to speak. We've been saying, I didn't disagree with the law of attraction as that it existed. I just said it's incomplete and they've done it in a vacuum because they've made it individualized and they've made it sort of self-contained, where, as I said in the beginning, as soon as you meet somebody else with a different intention, how does that get resolved exactly? I mean, we can't have everybody, basically playing etch-a-sketch with each other's thoughts. So your stuff, kind of to sum things up here, we're going to go a little over 10 o'clock, but that's okay, is that women in general have a need in the culture to overcome difficulty in their lives in a self-empowered way, in a way that they initiate themselves. You're saying, based on your negative experiences, both relationship-wise and all the things that happened in your past, you hit a point where you said, this is not just about me. And as soon as you said it wasn't just about you, and you expanded that view, then you found the energy to go, I'm going to do something to create, I'm going to make a diamond out of this lump of coal here. And that manifested, or you concentrated on creating a book and said, I'm going to share it, and it's going to be a bestseller. It's not just going to be a book I'm going to throw out the window here. And all the people and all the mechanisms and all the websites and all the other intermediary steps naturally fell into place for you in a period of what, a year and a half, 2 years?
I would say about a year.
Oh, wow. So if we're sitting here January of last year, this is still on the kitchen table on a legal pad.
I would say, actually, I started the book in February, yes.
That's February last year.
Hawaii, and yes.
Well, I'd recommend Hawaii for a lot of people then to clear their heads. That'd be nice. Come back with a bestseller. I think Tony Robbins actually wrote Unlimited Power in Hawaii, actually, in like four days. So that was another point. Nope. Maybe there's something to the island. I don't know.
Very magical.
Yeah, the Tiki God from the Ready Bunch. Okay. So your deal was, once that happened, for the last year, you basically were, you got up in the morning and you were book-minded, so to speak, and and you were thinking about these women. You were thinking about these women that are out there banging their heads against the wall, reading all the garbage secret books that are out there, and you were going to write the definitive book for women to apply the law of attraction to gain much more control of the way their bodies looked, felt, and acted without all the garbage, without all the sort of the untold story, so to speak, so that they're not walking around, as we say, valley victims, and they could actually move through a lot of this resistance without having to face it the way they did in the past, which was to sort of deny it, push it away, put it in their body, so to speak, and throw up their arms and say, the unconscious got me, like you were saying in the beginning, oh, the economy, and have this sort of learned helplessness kind of guiding the process. So that's actually, like I said, you kind of worded through the fence there, that the somatic fence there that we had there for you, didn't bug zap you totally on that. And I think hopefully we got across some of the things that we were saying to you, was that it isn't just about the backswing, the intent part, but it's also about how you carry that intent and how you integrate that with everything else that's happened to you that you're never going to be conscious of, you're never going to have control of, you're never going to be even aware of most of the time, but yet it still exists, and yet your body is still interacting with your environment, all the stuff that we talked about with Bruce Lipton's work. So, you know, you're getting closer to the biological kind of root of a lot of this cosmic debris that's been floating out there for I don't know how many years now, all the way back to Redfield, I guess, or back to the 80s with the Korean conspiracy. So what's next for you now? Now that you got this out there, I know there's a book tour. I know there's going to be parades in your hometown. I know there's going to be interviews with, libraries of Congress, all that. What happens? Is there going to be more from this same line of thinking, or are you going to put that down as a stepping stone and go on to other things?
Well, to me, I know my work is definitely more about women, so I would probably focus on another area, you know, maybe just solely relationships, even though part of this book talks about relationships. But for me, I just kind of live my life and see what women really need right now. And I just gave a presentation today where women were crying because they were so moved. It was just something they needed to hear. And it was speaking about fear, you know, speaking how to really let it go, especially what people are facing today. And women are just so emotional, you know, they like to express themselves. And I just want to be that voice to connect with them, to say, you know what, it's okay. It's okay to feel whatever it is that you're feeling. So I would probably have to say doing more things about letting go, you know, letting go of those fears that you're having in your life.
Yeah, well, you started out with saying releasing weight rather than losing weight, which is, it's much easier to think about someone just, you know, kind of dropping a brick on the ground than trying to squeeze themselves into that size 3. You know, it's like I just see women going through almost the self-induced agony, especially the ones that are just running like rabbits at the gym all the time. And it's like their mindset is so externalized. It's so like, I must get approved from the outside world and the way I look, even though I feel like crap on the inside. And you're reversing it, turning that whole sock inside out and saying, no, this is about self-acceptance. This is about raising your standard on the inside and not so much ignoring the outside, but not giving it so much credibility that it controls everything you do. You know,
yeah, and it's not buying into other people's values and
right.
asking the question, what is important to me in every area of your life?
Yeah, I think, like I said, you're on a huge little trail here. Hopefully we'll hear more from you on that line of thinking. So, all right, so now we've come to the magical time. We're actually past the magical time, but we had a great conversation with you. What is the number one misconception about your book, your work, your world, that you'd like to clear up here for the listeners before we say goodbye?
I would think, if we're talking about any kind of misconceptions, that
mm-hmm.
if they even read the book, it's the typical law of attraction stuff, which you know you had pointed out earlier. It's not. It's really about connecting women on a much deeper level. So I always want to end with, you know, being true to yourself and not just reading a bunch of books, really apply it. I don't want people buying my book and just reading it through and not doing any of the exercises. You've got to apply them. You've got to use these every single day. It's just like working out at the gym. You just can't work out one time and then expect to look a certain way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a lifestyle that, you know, it does take practice to perfect, and also it has to be something that's naturally yours. You're not just doing it because Heather said to do it or because, you know, Oprah said it'll help you or whatever. This is something you personalize, you internalize, you sort of wear it in your heart, and if it's not true to you, you know, sometimes I might whisper in their ear, the truth is light. If it doesn't feel light to do it, what gets heavy gets dropped, and then you pick up the next self-help book and the next self-help book, and you go, this is kind of a dumbass process. I might just, you know, do something else here, go bowling or something. But so anyway, anyone that's been listening this long has probably had a good time with us here. I'm sure I did anyway. And if you're interested in getting a hold of Heather, you can go to thespirittrainer.com. Remember, there's two T's there. I'll definitely correct that as soon as we're off the air on our little description of you there. And anything we can do to help promote what you're doing here on Soma Time, just send it over to us. And I think what you did is monumentally different, and it stands out. That's why we wanted you on the show. So thanks for joining us here tonight.
Well, thank you so much. I had a lot
thanks,
of fun.
Thanks, Heather. See you later.
All right, take care, Heather.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, what have we learned?
Ugh.
We learned never to sign off at 10 o'clock again. That's the best. That's the best, man. That's like loosening your belt on Thanksgiving. I don't have to rush off. Because I was getting some good stuff right there at 10 o'clock, and usually I'm breaking out in a sweat. Not tonight, Sapiens. Okay. Olay, Philippi say. So did you like what you had to say? You were disgusted? You went through some...
Yeah, she's logical anyway.
Mm-hmm.
She's got some logic in there. It's not all wussy woo stuff.
What's that?
It's not all a bunch of BS wussy woo stuff. I think she has some good stuff in there, so.
And for those keeping score at home, Heather is a philo who has a very exo way of talking, which is fascinating for us.
Yeah, it's great.
Yes, because it's just like if you've seen the movie The Watchmen, the Superman in the movie, the guy that's hit with the quantum field, is a philo before he's affected by the accident, and then he becomes exo because he becomes omnipotent, and which most exos feel they are. They are so. It's funny to watch him become disconnected from people and not emotionally invested anymore. And even though he's got all this awareness and all this, you know, quantum power, it's almost like a disconnect. He doesn't relate to us as being human anymore. Which exos have a lot of times look at us and go, "I'm not one of them." So if you are a one of the tribe of the Crimson whatever. the exo tribe out there, you know, the average Clint Eastwood-looking type, take heart, because it does go the other direction, as we see with Heather here, who is able to keep her philo-ness, that was apparent during the entire time, and she definitely, you can hear that she definitely has compassion and can relate to what women go through, but not in the belligerent, vow-like way that we're used to experiencing here on Summertime.
That's
which
right.
is nice, refreshing, and less filling. Tastes great.
That's right. Yeah, she seemed pretty coherent.
Oh yeah, that's the thing about the law of attraction that's good, is that once you have something that really energizes you, like, you know, we got the Soma here, all right? Now, it doesn't always lead to a lot of money, but it does lead to a lot of clarity about what it is that you're experiencing on the inside. And when you have that, that's the power of it. The power of it is that you can take that little conscious slice that you get and fill it with things that are useful rather than things that are cluttered. You know, it's like all that crap in the back seat and the crap in the trunk should not be driving the car. You want a little space up there, maybe a little, like, heated seats,
oh,
that kind of thing.
Rick has that in his car. That is nice.
Of course he does.
Yes, the Acura.
Mm-hmm. So just to kind of sum that up, that was interesting to me, because usually when I face off with a secret safe, it's a bloody mess, and we're off in 10 minutes, and we have almost an hour with her, so...
Uh-huh.
I'm amazed. Maybe the secret was working all along to make sure the interview went well.
Perhaps.
We'll never know.
No.
No.
Because it's a secret.
Ain't got nobody. Where is it? There it is. Waiting at home. There you go.
God.
All right. So next week we have nobody scheduled right now. The Law of Attraction will be finding us a guest. We have several boats. Out there, and we're looking for someone in the water floating that is not a drowned NFL player. But, you know, in between now and then, think pleasant thoughts. It is an eco week. Put your feet up, get emotional, and don't watch a lot of TV about the economy. You'll be fine.
No, watch SpongeBob.
Yeah, watch SpongeBob and get SpongeBob figurines.
That's right. There's no recession in Bikini Bottom.
Good to know. Good to know. So we'll leave you with this, Heather, if you're out there. And we will see you next week, 9 o'clock, on Zumba Dive. For all those who aren't listening, travel light. Crazy day, the intermission, man. We're back in the alley trading.
Oh.